I say, Gus, how does one come to talk like Jimmy Stewart? And you said to me, most important words anyone ever said to me in my life, and that's just, be born in Indiana, PA! Everyone, and welcome again to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. And before we get into it, before I explain who I am, before I explain who my brother is, I just want to say, if you are afraid of heights, if you sometimes get dizzy, then maybe this episode is not for you. Maybe you don't want to find yourself getting that vertigo. Yeah? All right, so I am your host, Ben, with me as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Well, my acquaintances call me Scotty.
Do you prefer John or
Jack.
Or Jack? Well, Scotty, I just told you.
I was thinking maybe you could call me Scotty or even John.
John, but I've never even met you before, and you're saying your accomplices, your people call you Scotty.
Yeah, well, not my accomplices, my acquaintances.
Oh, you're quite, yeah. What's the difference?
How about this? How about you just call me Gus?
Gus, all right. Well, as we do on this Movie Factory, we are a podcast of the movies, by the movies, for the movies. I would say we are...
the movies.
Swallow
my brandy there.
Yeah. So on this podcast, what we do every week, we take a film. We discuss that film, talk about what's good, talk about what's bad. We then submit that movie to the factory. This is the portion of the show where we take the movie we just watched, and we imagine what it would be like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would be the stars? Same film, just imagining what it would be like with new people involved. Yeah? Sound good? Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Good. Yes.
What can I say except...
You're welcome! For the lawsuit Disney's gonna have. All right. Well, so this week we watched a classic Alfred Hitchcock movie. Alfonso Nisito. Alfred Hitchcock masterpiece, really. Probably his, I wouldn't say his crowning achievement, but one that he was probably more proud of than anything. And that is Vertigo.
So, this is your pick this week.
Yes.
You wanted to honor old Jimmy, baby. Jimmy Stewart.
We always talk about him. We mention Midge. We mention Brandy. We especially mention Cushion. You can't leave out Cushion. That's, it's like, I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, Gus, and Cushion.
I have a couple people reach out to me every now and then, like, why so much Jimmy Stewart in the show? Or, like,
why not?
Or, it only took halfway through the podcast for Jimmy Stewart to show up. We have a listener who even sometimes messages me, like, the time. Here's Jimmy.
Hey, I'm just saying, I don't think we use him enough. So that's why this episode is just all going to be Jimmy.
So it's your pick. You picked old Vertigo.
Yes.
You have only seen one Jimmy Stewart movie.
Yeah, but
and as Vertigo, why'd you pick Vertigo?
Well, I liked it a lot when I first watched it. I watched it in a film class in college. And then secondly, and I didn't appreciate it as much. I wasn't even telling you, this movie has a lot of twists and turns in it. And I didn't pick up on a lot of it in college because it was in a classroom and I was fidgety and I wanted out of there. It was a night class, so I wasn't full into the movie. And so I did want to watch it again. And like you said, it's the only real Jimmy Stewart movie I've seen fully. But at the same time, in my head, I wanted to pick a movie of Jimmy Stewart's that I had seen and that I am more familiar with, the characters. Because I feel like when we're doing this factory at the end of the show and when working through, who we're going to have and who we're replacing and all that stuff, this is a movie that I think, with all its twists and turns, with all its, it's like almost like science fiction halfway through, or supernatural, like a supernatural thriller at the beginning, and at the end it's still kind of there, but it's more of just like a mystery drama. It's something that would work today that I don't think anyone's done anything near this, the twists and turns this movie provides. And so I definitely wanted to just go into it and talk about who could play these characters, who are, I mean, just in our show alone, iconic, really. Midge. It's not funny, Midge.
So
that's
I know
not funny at all. let's schedule that movie another time.
So, yeah, I asked you why this movie, said you're familiar with it, but this is, over the years, has been like an inside joke between you and me.
Yar.
For a while, and we've been able to bleed that inside joke into the podcast here. But that's like normal everyday conversation.
Pretty much. There's days I'll, like, I'll call you and you'll be like, hello, and be like, Midge.
Today, today, you called and I answered. I was like, Madeline.
Yeah, I was like, okay. this movie is just phenomenal.
But before we dive into it, just FYE for your entertainment, and FYI, spoilers ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, this movie has, we talked about during the movie, I would say it has about two twists. It's got like a midway twist that you see coming, or you don't see coming, but it happens, and you're like, well, the movie's over, and then there's another like 45 minutes to an hour left, and then there's another twist at the very end that isn't like your standard M. Night Shyamalan twist, but it's more of a twist that you're like, that's how it ends. There are definitely going to be spoilers involved with this episode. So if you have an interest in watching this 1958 Alfred Hitchcock masterpiece of a movie, it makes a lot of top movie lists. A lot of people are tweeting us back today saying, you know, this is one of their favorites. And rightfully so, you might want to shut her off now and just go watch it. Go watch it.
Do it.
It is great. Now, I've met people before that I've told about this movie, and they're like, you know, Ben, what's a good movie to watch right now? And I'll ask them what they're looking for, and they'll tell me. And I'll be like, you know, you like crime, and you like mystery and all that stuff. Why don't you watch Vertigo? And I'll explain it to them, and they're like, that sounds great. And I'll say, yeah, it's an older movie. And they say, how old? And I say, 1958. And they go, ugh, no. I said, why?
Yeah, why?
It's an old movie. I can't do old movies. Yeah, I'm like, it's so good, though. And it doesn't even, you know, the oldest part about this movie is sometimes the way Jimmy Stewart acts in the cars.
Yeah,
like, other than that, it's so good.
I can't buy when people say I don't watch old movies, because it's mainly they say it's the way it looks.
Yeah.
It looks old. I'm like, Argo, fuck yourself. if you appreciate movies in general, if you appreciate good characters, good story, good filmmaking, like what does it matter?
Alfred Hitchcock takes you on a journey in this film too.
All of his works.
Oh yeah, do. Even like Birds, which is like ridiculous. Alfred Hitchcock movie. Yeah. It's so good. Like you and I watched that probably like 2-3 years ago, and it's like this movie's
man or you know, nature attacks.
Yeah, but it's so weird. Like the idea of it, but it's so good at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Some of my favorite works of old Hitchy Baby would be,
that's his God-given name, by the way.
Rope. Yeah, I like Rope.
What about that window in the back?
Back in the rear?
Right, back in the rear, that window in the rear. The window.
Rear Window. That'd be my favorite Hitchcock movie.
Oh, that's blasphemy, because tonight we watch Vertigo.
Vertigo would be a close 2 or 3.
Like,
yeah.
My favorite like Jimmy Psycho. Stewart movie is all of them.
My favorite Jimmy Stewart movie is Feifel Goes West.
Ah.
That's his last movie.
Who is he in that?
He's
he's Feifel.
He's like, Wiley Burp. He's the dog who teaches him how to do the lazy eye.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I need to watch those movies again. I was just telling Ye Olde Fiancé about Feifel Goes West and Feifel, the first Feifel movie.
American Tale.
Yeah, American Tale. And I was explaining it to her, and she's like, sounds good. Is it like Disney? I'm like, I don't think it is. It's not Disney, correct?
It's, is it Universal?
It's good.
It's a Don Bluth movie.
It has that vibe, though. It's good.
I got him. You can borrow him.
Oh, well, there you are. But we're off topic because we're talking
about...
No,
we're still talking Jimmy Stewart.
We are.
Psycho. I like Psycho.
Is he in Psycho, too?
No. It's just a Hitchcock movie. Hitchcock movie. Okay. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That and Strangers on a Train and Dial M for Murder.
Strangers on a Train, correct me if I'm wrong, that's like Throw Mama from the Train, kind of. Crisscross. Yeah.
Crisscross.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Roadhouse. So, yeah, Hitchcock's one of my favorite filmmakers. He's one I appreciate amongst many others. And
he's underappreciated in his time, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is interesting.
He's like a fine artist. Most of them don't care about their works until, you know.
He's like a fine wine.
Yes. Shakespeare.
Yes.
But no, he had quite the career up to this point, and he was working on making this film, and he was doing some traveling in 1951, and he was in San Francisco, and he found it to be, it was like the Paris of America. He fell in love with San Francisco. He felt it was like the most cosmopolitan of all the American cities.
And then he saw Full House.
So he knew one day he wanted to create a film where San Francisco was its setting, and it took him roughly 7 years to get there with all Vertigo, but he chose to adapt the book. I'm going to butcher the name because it's all French and that, but it'd be D'Entrée les Morts.
Pittsburgh.
D'Entrée des Morts and that. Which translates
I'll
to from
speak this French
translates to from among the dead by I'm gonna fuck this too
Pittsburgh say it Pittsburgh accent gives you a pass
boy you narsajag
boy you narsajag
that's it
and that
yins so they're adapting it roughly the same story however this film has Hitchcock's stamp
Hitchcock
on it.
Cockiness?
Yeah.
No, Hitchcockiness. That's the word. That's got to be patented.
Get hitchcocked.
Yeah.
This movie got Hitchcocked, or this book got Hitchcocked, because he took the bones, but he put his own skin on top of it.
He took it and made it better. Actually, I can't say that because I never read the book. Next level. That's what he said. That's actually like circa 1951. He read the book. He's like, I'm gonna take this to the next level.
That's what he did. And he made it his own beast. Like I said, he took the bones of the book, but he put his own skin on it. A lot of people would say Vertigo is his most personal film.
Now, does he say it was based on the book? Like, does he give credit to it?
Yeah, even in the opening credits, it says, you know, story based on...
I was just so... The opening credits of this movie are really, really good. The music's... Not only is the music great, but it's, like, very, like... It's, honestly, there's just a lot of visuals going on. You might find... Honestly, you find it hard to, like, pay attention to the words on the screen. You're like, what am I looking at?
You get sucked into...
Lots of eyeballs and lips and...
It kind of makes you feel like you're going insane.
A little bit, yeah. All the flashing lights.
It's hard to look away unless your roommate Matt. He's like, when will this end?
Yeah, pretty much.
When will these credits end?
He's like, I looked over like 5 minutes into the film, and his mouth was open. He's like,
he was sucked in at that point, but
until he left 2 minutes later.
I made this comment at him, and I will make this comment at you, spit listeners out there. We need more movies like this that teach you patience. You know, it's not like action a second. You know, you just gotta sit back and just take it in. You know,
this is what I would say, because I don't agree with old James Cameron. James Cameron has been kind of voicing his opinion in terms of like these Marvel movies and saying, you know, it's all mindless action. There's no build. There's no this and that, and you know, no emotion. This movie is how long would you say? 2 hours almost.
2 hours and 9 minutes.
And 9 minutes. And so what's interesting about this movie is it is slow. It is really slow.
It's not slow.
But it's not at the same time. Yeah, you're kind of pulled in because there is this supernatural element. It's almost like it starts out as this normal film with a guy who's afraid of heights. And then all of a sudden it turns into this guy who's looking after this girl who has this supernatural aspect to her, and then it turns into a love story, and then it turns into a mystery, and then it turns into him going crazy, and there's so many... You're watching an evolution through this movie. An evolution is a mystery. It's full of change, you know, you see. That's a WWE reference.
There you go.
So it's just, you're watching this evolution on film, and it's really interesting. If you can sit there, and if you're one of those people that's like, you need action per minute, you need something going on constantly in your film, if you can sit there and watch this movie and just kind of open up to what this character is going through on screen and kind of engross yourself in the mystery. Because the first time I ever watched this, I had no clue what to expect. And to watch this film and watch it all unfold at once, I mean, the end of the movie leaves you with your mouth open. You're like, what did I just witness? Like, yeah. This whole movie just messes with you at the end. It's like, oh, so good.
You started to mention it there. Jimmy Stewart was a perfect choice for this film, not only because he's an incredible actor, one
really
of the best, but he is the perfect everyman, as in you can place yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
He's so good at being able to portray that and let you come along with that.
He's just a guy that enjoys a nice cup of brandy, a warm fire, a TV that's nowhere near his couch.
Yeah, you don't need that.
Yeah, and just to talk like this. I'm pretty sure the first thing I ever said to you after I watched the old Vertigo in college was, I think I say, Gus, how does one come to talk like Jimmy Stewart? And you said to me, most important words anyone ever said to me in my life, and that's just, be born in Indiana, PA, the best damn city, town in Pennsylvania.
I'll take this course and I'll be able to scratch myself again. I'll be able to throw this miserable thing out the window.
Out the window.
Let
me make my own drink.
I want to drink this down quick, like medicine.
Yeah, he does say that. So here, take some brandy. It's 5 a.m. You just woke up. It's medicine.
Drink it down like medicine.
Yeah. Here's some cocaine. Try that.
And Jimmy Stewart's one of my favorite actors of all times.
He's like one of my favorites, and I've seen him in one movie.
One movie.
I've seen him in scenes from like It's a Wonderful Life. I saw him cutting a rug on the dance floor before he gets falling in the pool.
That baffles
me. I've seen
me.
Him go, Merry never, Christmas!
You've never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
You suggested Edward Scissorhands.
Instead,
that's like our worst episode of the show, so thanks.
What have I done? But what was I going to say?
I don't know. Doesn't matter. Our show's over. All right. Jimmy
Stewart there. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is just
life advice to everyone at home. If you're ever like lost for words, say you're talking to someone, say you're in an interview and they're like, what are your strengths? And you're like, well, I'm good with people. And you just stumble. You're stuck. You're like, I'm good with people. You just go right to Jimmy Stewart. I'm Word. I can do Word on the computer. I know how to clean windows.
you use references movies.
I can take photographs. Yeah,
I can take photographs.
I can follow people around. Yeah, I can follow people around. Yeah. I can shoot Liberty Valance.
Yeah. I wonder about, you know,
I might have a little buddy friend, Harvey.
I can go to Washington.
I got a museum down in Indiana. I'm highly qualified for this job.
War hero.
Yeah. And then you don't get the job. But it's beside the point. It'll help you. At least give you that confidence back.
Yeah, if ever you need a little boost of confidence, just think in the back of your head. James Stewart.
You're like, WWJD, what would Jimmy do?
Yeah, that's right. He'll be with you. So, getting into Vertigo here.
Vertigo. Vertistop. Oh, my. I'm sorry.
Vertigo.
I'm very sorry.
Vertigo. After the opening credits, they're very visually enticing.
And the music's so good, too. That's one thing before we actually touch on this movie. I do want to touch on the music real quick. The music throughout this movie is very mesmerizing. It's almost like hypnotic. It's like slow and dreamlike, I would say, is the best quality of it. And it's so interesting in that it it does make you feel like you're, like, I don't know, slowly slipping into madness.
Made him feel it, did you?
Yes. But it is, yeah, it's the music's so good. And it was to the point where I was like, I don't think they make music like this anymore. Like, I was thinking about, like, who's going to compose this? I'm like, they don't do music like this anymore. Let's take, like, the real edgy way and have, like, Kanye West do the music.
Jesus.
Oh, didn't he do Great Gatsby? Jay-Z did Great Gatsby?
Yeah, maybe that.
Someone did Great Gatsby. Jay-Z,
like,
I think.
Like, there's music in it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we'll do, like, different.
One, 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 one. That's Kanye West. One, 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 one.
We're going to get sued this episode. All right. That would only matter if we got more listeners.
That's right.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Yeah.
Oh, God. That was our geometry teacher.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
He's listening.
Yeah, but after those credits, we get right into the action. And it's a chase scene of a bad guy running, a cop chasing with a gun. And there's, I keep wanting to call him LB Jeffries. That's his fucking character in Rear Window. This is Scotty Ferguson.
Yeah, Scotty Ferguson.
He's chasing them down, too. And they're leaping on roofs across the San Francisco shoreline there. And
the bay.
The bay.
San Francisco bay.
The bay. Yeah. They're hopping,
B-A-E.
They're jumping across, and old Scotty, he doesn't make it. He's hanging on the gutter. He needs some help. The copper.
He's lucky that's a seamless gutter. That's right. I put up gutter once.
If it had a gutter guard, he'd be fucked.
Oh no, yeah, gutter guard, leaf guard, he'd kill him.
Copper goes back to save him. Like, take my hand, take my hands, boss.
Jimmy Stewart can't do it. He can't reach out. He's got that vertigo because he looks down, and it does that cool shot. The best, it's kind of like where the ground stays where it is, but everything else pulls, like, stretches away from it. It's kind of like that feeling you get when you're up really high and you look down and everything seems like it's, like, getting further away. One of the best thing, like, not analogies, but other shots.
References
to this shot would be, like, Jaws, where it's, like, where Brody sees the shark attack, the boy gets attacked on the
little Kittner boy.
Yeah, little Kittner boy. Spill out across the dock. He sees it, and it's like everything behind him pulls away, but his face stays the same. Yeah. It's kind of similar where, like, the point of focus stays the same and everything pulls away. And I'm pretty sure this is one of the first times that actual, like, shot technique was used. And it's used a lot of times throughout this film really effectively to show you, like, how he's feeling. Like, it gives you that sense.
And it makes
of, like,
you feel that way, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, I have a fear of heights. You do as well. We both, through our work throughout the years and working different jobs and things like that, have kind of gotten over that fear to an extent. Yeah, I still have trouble getting up really high in certain things, but we've both worked in a line of work that has required us to climb up ladders.
Oh, yeah.
High ladders in some cases.
Climbing up, you know, 30-plus feet.
Yeah.
With a full tool belt, a shitty dish, and a windstorm ain't fun.
No. I used to carry up gutter, and I never did it in a windstorm because we just wouldn't work. But definitely you get that feeling of vertigo. And I think everyone, I mean, I've seen some videos of, like, daredevils, like, jumping on, like, skyscrapers and stuff. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
But pretty much I would say.
That gives,
like,
me vertigo just watching them.
I'm like, I would say, like, 95% of the population of the world is, like, semi-afraid of heights. Like, if they were put in a situation where they're dangling from a gutter, they would be kind of afraid.
That happened to me last summer.
Yeah.
I was hanging from a mount I put up, and I had a ladder set up, and their gutter fell, and my ladder slipped, and I grabbed onto this mount for dear life. I was dangling about 25 feet.
That's not fun.
No. I looked down, and that zoom shot went in.
I had one of those. Have you ever had one of those vertigo moments where, not vertigo, but, like, was agoraphobia? Is that?
Acro.
Acrophobia? Fear of heights? Where it feels like the ground's coming at you really fast. Mm. I was on the top of a restaurant I was working at, and I was cleaning out their gutters. And it was only a one-story restaurant, but I was at the top, like the peak of the roof, the rough, if you will. And it was a metal roof, and I slipped. And I was sliding down that metal roof on my ass, full tilt. And I just saw the ground coming at me. It was a gravel ground, and they had the ice breakers on the roof, and I was able to plant my feet in them.
There you go.
But, oh, I was terrified. It was probably like an eight-foot fall.
Yeah,
like,
that's why
they're broken.
That's why the ground was coming at you so fast. You're sliding right at it.
That's why the ground was coming so fast. It was right there.
It wasn't too far away.
It was like the scene from Robin Hood, Men in Tights. I was like, I can't swim. Help!
So, yeah, that vertigo shot. Do you know the way that's accomplished?
Isn't it like you... Is it you focus the camera while you pull it back? You zoom the camera while you pull back.
Yeah, you zoom the lens while you're pulling back.
Yeah.
So zoom in, pull back, it makes that.
Yeah, because it's like zooming with it, but you're pulling it further away. So it makes the focus zoom, but your focus stay the same, but everything else.
There's motion.
Yeah. Which it's a really neat shot if utilized correctly.
He's petrified, and he can't grab old Copper's hand, and Copper slips and falls to his death.
Yeah.
And not only... Is old Jeffries, fuck my dick off until I spit.
Just call him Jimmy.
Jimmy, he looks down.
I told you, if ever you get tongue-tied,
like Jimmy.
You should have been...
He's so confident.
Yeah, you're like, Jeffries is what you keep wanting to say. So you're like,
Jimmy.
Scotty.
He's petrified from his acrophobia, but he also sees death, feels guilt now. Fear and guilt.
Calm and murder.
And then we get introduced to old Midge.
Yeah, Midge. Midge is a fine girl. Midge is his friend from college, who at one point they were engaged. She called it off. You get the feel that they have this kind of friendly relationship.
They're buds.
But I always take it as that kind of relationship between the two of them that it's like, they were once maybe in love with each other, so they always kind of have those feelings for each other.
Especially her, and you can tell from just the way they use the shots, the editing, the way they
it's
cut
never
to her.
Said. It's never said.
Not
yeah.
straight out, but Midge's actions kind of
And we
you.
Know what's said is said.
What's said is said, and what Midge says is nothing but what she does.
Yes. But, definitely that you get that kind of feeling. Thank you. Burp. I burped.
Do you hear that?
Yeah, definitely get the feel that they have this kind of friendly relationship that is definitely love. They have love for each other, but it's kind of conformed into just a friendship, a mutual friendship. And they just kind of are talking and discussing how he's going to get over his fear, and he's trying
to
utilize
he can lick it.
Yeah, he's trying to utilize a legitimate technique to get rid of fear, and that's to slowly introduce it over time. Now,
introduce height.
Yeah, when you do that, he does one thing wrong, and that's when you do it. You do it literally one step at a time. No pun intended. Over a course of months, he keeps going higher and higher in a course of like minutes.
Yeah, he get himself a nice tall stepladder.
Yeah, he like goes on a little stool, and then he goes on a chair, and he gets on that stepladder that's three rings, and he gets to the top, and he looks
up,
down, and he's good.
Looks up.
Yeah, he looks out the window.
That rear window will get you.
That rear window, the big alleyway right there, and it gets him. So he has this kind of panic attack, kind of faints, and he acknowledges that he can't work in a he doesn't want to work in a desk. He wants to be a cop, but he can't be a cop because he's worried that this phobia will come back. That he'll have an event where he has to climb up ladders or climb up stairs, and or even to the point where he'll drop a pen and go to pick it up, and he'll have this vertigo kick in, this phobia kick in, and the vertigo makes him get dizzy. Now, I had mentioned to you, it's funny that after this point in the movie, the vertigo really doesn't play that big of a part until about midway through again. And you mentioned to me, you think the vertigo of the title is more dealing with the fact that this movie is very disorienting. It's like all over the place. It's kind of sending you with old Scotty on a wild goose chase.
It does such a good job at putting your mind in Scotty's mind.
Because he's the everyman.
He's the everyman. And but just the way it's paced, the way the screenplay is, like the beats, so it's like we're going to show you this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to show you this, and we're going to do this. You feel what Scotty's feeling. So when he feels fear, like you could potentially feel it too. When he's disoriented and doesn't know which way is up, which way is down, which girl's Midge, which girl's Madeline, and and so on and so forth. You feel it.
Our Judy.
Our Judy. Dame Judi Dench. Wait, yeah, no, she's not in this movie. But we got Kim Novak.
Oh, Kim Novak. But yes, so he is then, he does mention to Midge that he's going to see an old friend from high school. In the next scene, we do see them talk. And then his old friend from high school, they're just kind of, was it college?
Yeah.
Okay.
Big difference.
Sorry. They're just kind of, not anymore. They're just kind of discussing, you know, their life, what they've been doing, how he's kind of come into money in the shipping company because of his wife and her family, and that he's kind of worried about his wife because his wife has been displaying these kind of weird, almost supernatural-esque behaviors. She is leaving the house and going places and not remembering what happened. She's acting like someone different.
Even to the point of how she walks.
Yes, she walks, she talks different, she looks different, has like a different look in her eyes, she wears different jewelry. Everything's different about her. It's almost like she's a different person. And he says that, you know, one day he followed her, and he followed her down to a point at the Golden Gate Bridge, and he watched her, and she just stood there for hours, and he had to leave. And when he came back to the house later, she mentioned that that's where she stayed. She stayed there all day, but he read her odometer, and it said 96 miles had been driven, and he needed to know where she had been. So he basically brings old Scotty on as a private eye, and he's going to follow his wife around, and so he does. And over the course of several days, he's just kind of tracking her and
seeing what she does,
and it's fairly normal. I mean, she's going to different places. She's going to museums. She's going to flower shops. But then, you know, at the museum, she sits there and she stares at the same painting for hours. And then she goes to a graveyard and she stands at a graveyard for hours. And so she keeps doing this, and he gets kind of curious. So he starts looking at the different the grave. And the grave's Carletta Vendez, I believe.
Verdez
or something, yes. Carletta. And then he then goes to the painting. The painting's of the same woman. And he kind of comes to realize, and help from the husband, that this is the woman that supposedly is kind of coming back from the dead and haunting old Madeline, his wife. And basically that she's going to, the spirit is going to cause his wife to kill herself because she was 26.
Old Carletta baby.
Carletta was 26 when she committed suicide, and Madeline was 26, or is 26 yeah. Now. I think one of the coolest scenes in this movie is when Jimmy Stewart, his character, Scotty, does track her to a hotel and watches her walk in, watches her open the upstairs window. He comes inside, asks the nice lady behind the counter to, you know, open up that room and show him and tell him who's in it, and she says who it is, and she says it's Carletta, which is kind of interesting. And he said, well, can you take me up to her? And he says, well, she's not here. She hasn't been here in weeks. And he's like, well, I just saw her go up there. And she says, no, she's not here. No one's up there. And she takes him up, and no one's there, and the car's gone. It's like who's is Jimmy crazy? Is Scotty crazy? Or is something else going on? There's a supernatural aspect to this story going on.
It almost seems unbelievable at first, but just enough is given to you that you're like, maybe this is actually happening. Maybe it's not a case of someone being crazy or being, you know, driven the wrong way. Maybe this could actually be happening. And basically, it gets even deeper. Old Madeline, when she becomes this Carletta, she might actually be becoming her, might be possessed by an old bloodline.
Yes, and the husband does tell Scotty that this Carletta had committed suicide, and throughout the years, her jewelry had been passed down throughout that family. And
everyone who has it,
Madeline, her grandmother had it before she passed it down to her, and her grandmother committed suicide as well. So he's very worried for his wife, Madeline. Scotty does follow her to the bay.
Very famous scene.
Yeah, very, very famous. Follows her to the bay and watches her as she chucks flowers into the San Francisco Bay, and then she just decides to
chuck herself
in. Yeah, And Jimmy being a licensed lifeguard and a war hero. I think he was Air Force. Indiana, you know, known for its oceans. Indiana, PA. IUP, you know, University of Indiana, Pennsylvania.
There should be.
but yes, Jimmy, just being a gentleman, jumps in there and... He's like, this is the right thing to do.
Some blokes hold doors.
I
save bitches.
back in the 50s, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, he jumps in and saves her. Swims her ashore, takes her home. Undresses her. Puts her in bed.
He couldn't let her sit in those wet things.
Yeah, hangs her clothes up to dry. We were talking about that movie, and we're like, this wouldn't fly today. Like, I don't think you would take, like, I understand saving her. Yeah, that's fine. But, like, taking her home, undressing her in your house.
There's no consent.
Yeah, hanging her clothes up. I'm like, I don't think that would, just being a good Samaritan, but some would call this creepy.
Yeah, hey, she wakes up, she doesn't mind.
Yeah, she doesn't at all.
She's like, she's more concerned, like, she's in a strange place. That's about it.
Yeah, she's like, oh, I'm naked in a strange place. And he's like, here's a robe.
Here's a robe. Yeah. Put that on for me.
But yes, she does wake up in his house, and he kind of explains what happens, but she doesn't know. She doesn't know what happens. And you can tell, Jimmy Stewart, he's such a good actor that, like, to this point, like, from the first time he saw her, you can almost tell that he's kind of, like, falling for her in a sense.
Infatuated,
yeah. Yeah, like, she's very beautiful. Kim Novak, it's honestly astonishing that she wasn't in more around this time, because she is very beautiful.
Very beautiful. Yeah,
stunningly beautiful. And
she's really great in this film.
Yeah, she's amazing in this film. Yep. And she technically almost, and we'll get to it, plays two characters.
Yeah.
She wakes up and he gives her a robe and tells her her clothes are hanging up, and she comes out in her robe and pulls her up some cushion on the fire and pours her some brandy. I think he pulls her some coffee in this scene. Yeah, well, there's probably brandy in the coffee. Yeah. Well, back in the 50s, brandy was coffee. It's all the same thing.
I love the writing of this movie, too. Like, this scene alone is a good example of it. It's just talk.
Yeah.
Just get to know yous. Like, he knows her. She doesn't know.
But he's playing it off like...
Yeah, they're just meeting for the first time. Yeah. He's like, being very direct and just trying to get at her. Like, Where were you before? No, before that. Yeah. Where were you going? What were you doing?
Which is weird, and she calls him on it.
Yeah. She's like, not rude, just direct.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just love this scene. It's a cozy scene. Music's very nice. Like I said, good writing, good dialogue back and forth. Jimmy Stewart, has a welcoming fire. He throws a cushion down. He has the coffee, and the next thing I know, my pants were gone.
Yeah,
I'm seduced, Jimmy.
But the thing about Jimmy Stewart and the way he acts, I'm calling him Jimmy because we're close personal friends, even to the grave. But
maybe you've been repossessed or possessed.
Repo man.
I'm here to take my body back.
But I wish I was 6'3". The thing about him is it's him. Like, it's the way he acts. You know, we joke about it with his stuttering and stammering, but it makes it feel more real. You know, a lot of times when actors are acting, it's almost too crisp, all of their lines. You know, with Jimmy Stewart, you know, there's scenes where he's like, he literally said, like, where were you before this? But instead of just being like, where were you before this, you know, like someone, like someone, I'm trying to name a random actor, I don't know,
Paul Levesque
Triple H,
Chaperone.
Like, I could think, like, Tom Hanks would probably be like, where were you before that? Something like along that lines. He would just kind of say it. But Jimmy Stewart, just having his natural kind of stammering to him, is like, where were you before that? Like, that little, it makes it natural.
Well, you know who has that makes it unnatural is Jeff Goldblum. Yes.
Are you saying that we should cast Jeff Goldblum in this movie?
Yes.
No.
There it is.
It's a tie.
So, but Ooh. Good. Carrying on. There's flirting there.
My word, son.
There's
flirting
there.
I just had to catch up on that.
And they meet up here and there in these next following scenes. Meeting.
Because he can kind of feel that she could kind of feel that he actually is like caring for her. Mm-hmm. Like he's worried, and she doesn't want to tell her husband because he might think she's crazy, and she knows she's not crazy.
She finds comfort with Scotty, and
it's Jimmy Stewart. He's a comforting man.
She feels safe. Yeah. He saved her. He comforted her.
He pulled up cushion.
Yeah.
He offered her brandy.
two cushions.
Yeah, he offered her brandy at 4 in the morning when she came asking for help.
That's the kind of guy I want to be around.
That was like one of the – I think that was one of the – after I watched this movie, I called you on my way back to my apartment. I was like, she came over at like 4 in the morning for help after having a bad dream. He's like, here, have some brandy.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's a little early to drink? It's like it's 4 p.m. somewhere. Yeah,
that's right. Come on over. Drink it down like medicine.
Yeah. It'll help you calm the nerves. Put you right back to sleep.
But what's nice about this is she feels safe with him. And he wants to protect her. He wants to find out what's going on with her. At first, it was to help her friend, but he becomes so infatuated with her. And then
she's very beautiful.
It slowly becomes an obsession.
She's almost a little seductive, too.
Oh, yeah. They flirt. They're flirting. And there's a romance that blooms.
Yeah.
A forbidden romance.
There's an intense scene, too, later. Because, I mean, he takes her to the Redwoods and
where she goes when she dips into that Carletta.
Yeah, and where Caesar is. And But she has a moment where she says, you know, this is where I was born. And she's pointing at a tree ring. And then she points to another tree ring and says, you know, this is where I'll die. And she walks away. And she's saying, you know, she has to go. She's saying she has to kill herself. There's something inside her that's telling her she has to do this. She doesn't know why. She doesn't want to, but something. So he takes her to a pier. And they have kind of a moment where they're talking. And she keeps telling him, you know, you have to let me go. There's something inside me. It's not going to stop. You got to let me go. And they kind of hug, and then she says, you know, I have to do it. And she runs to the water to dive into the bay, and he grabs her, and with the waves crashing behind her,
swells.
Oh, yeah, get your shirts coming off. Oh, yeah, Macho Man, Miss Elizabeth, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
That didn't happen.
It wasn't that intense, but it kind of felt like it.
What if they started kissing so hard they turned into Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth?
Start kissing so hard they turned into...
The Mega Power Handshake, and they don't even kiss. Oh, yeah. He grabs her, and he says, you son of a bitch, and they clap hands, and it's like when a Macho Man and Hulk Hogan... Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm erect.
They have a really passionate kiss with waves crashing
Macho Man and Hulk Hogan.
Scotty and Madeline have a really passionate kiss with waves crashing back. I even mentioned to you, I'm like, it's funny how like people in these older movies like kiss like they're having a fight. Like they're like grabbing each other and like
you're like, no one aggressively kisses like that. I was like, in my head, I'm like, Ben's probably saying, I wish someone would kiss me like that.
He's like, he's got a grip. And I was like, you could see, like, she clawing that back.
I bet if you went home and your fiancé grabbed you and kissed you like that, you'd perk a leg.
Perk a leg. And be like, ah! What was that for?
That's when you pull away, you'd be like, oh, blah, 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 blah. So now they're a thing. They're in love, and he's gonna keep her safe.
I'm in love, and I'm loving, and I don't care who knows it.
And he wants to help her. He wants to break this mental thing that's going on with her. He knows she's not gonna die. Mm. He's gonna keep her safe.
Yeah.
So they go to the place where she like has premonitions that she'll die.
Yes, this Mexican, Spanish
yeah,
village.
Spanish. What is it?
The missionary.
Missionary San Juan, but. Dave Batista.
I think it was the same San Juan Batista.
Yeah, whatever.
Batista.
And so they're there. They're, like, walking over the grounds, and he's just trying to convince her that, you know, everything makes sense. Like, here's what you've seen in your premonition here, and this is what you described before. See, it's all here. You're not going to die here. Everything can be explained. And she's just one more time saying, like, this isn't how things were supposed to be.
he's kissing her and she's just looking away. Yeah. And I was like, you know, that's usually not a good sign.
You're like me during sex. And yeah, he's just all about her and she's looking on like, I gotta go.
Yeah, but that is like, it almost gives her like, all right, so this movie is like a master of hindsight. Because on the first viewing, I watched that scene and I'm thinking to myself, like, she's looking at this tower that she's seen before in her head, and she, you know, she needs to go there. She has to go there. But, and we'll see in a little bit, hindsight 2020, you can see maybe she's like thinking about what she has to do in actual, in IRL, in real life, to you not old school texters.
And she runs off, and they say their I love yous one last time.
What she say to him? She's like, you have to let me go. And he's like, why? And she just kisses him. And I'm like,
all right.
Kim Novak at 24 says, you got to let her. And kisses you.
You got to let her.
Until she takes like 10 steps, and then you got to chase her.
Yeah, she runs off, and he chases her. Madeline. And she starts climbing up the stairs of the tower.
She's climbing, and he's ripping after her. And she's climbing, and he's getting that vertigo. This movie's getting a little more intense than we knew.
It's a pretty intense scene.
It is.
He's chasing after her. She's running up the stairs to the bell tower.
Batman 1989.
Please. 89. And, he can't get to her. He can't grab her. He can't save her because of his vertigo.
Yeah.
It's back now, and he's looking down. He's getting that zoom shot, and he's getting more and more sweaty as he's going up these stairs. He's getting scared.
As we all would.
But Madeline reaches the peak.
Takes the trap door.
And he can't get to her, and he hears a scream and looks out the window and sees her fall to her death.
Yeah.
And he knew he was helpless to protect her because he was weak.
And there is a cool shot after that where it like shows the tower, and it shows the priest and the nuns climbing up to Madeline's dead body on the one side, and then Jimmy Stewart's character comes out on the other end, and he kind of looks up at the tower and then walks away. And the next scene is in the courtroom, basically describing what had happened, that the husband is not at fault because he didn't want to commit her to care without having more information. So he hired this private eye, who the judge is really blaming it all on. He's saying
withheld information, pretty much.
Yeah, he withheld information. He took her to this place where she ultimately killed herself. Because of his vertigo, he was unable to save her. It could have been, you could place the blame on him. But the jury ends up deciding that, you know, it was the wife. The wife committed suicide. There was nothing he could do. So he is kind of exonerated of that crime. And so later on that night, he goes home. And probably, I would say, the most iconic scene of this movie. It's so different than everything else. Would you want to go into detail about that?
So he goes to sleep, and that's where the psychosis,
fever dream, man.
And you feel like you're having a fever dream too. And what really does it, other than the music being so intimidating, is the use of color here. So it's like just your regular shot, but then it'll like flash red, like everything turns red, and it'll go back to normal, and it like stays with the beat of the music. Dun, dun, red, black.
I don't know why I was thinking you were like dun. I was thinking of Halloween where it's like dun, dun, dun. Dun. When he's like walking, it's like bing, ding, ding, ding.
What if when Madeline jumped and to kill herself, and he looks down, she's gone.
Ding, 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 ding. Yes. Vertigo too.
And
where he goes to the mental hospital, and Madeline comes back from the dead. Elias Corletta now, and she got a knife, and she's gonna.
She came back.
Oh yeah,
but
this movie isn't an abomination.
So, but what other than the use of color there, it like breaks into like cartoon mode.
Yeah,
and it shows
almost
like
Beatles music video.
His head floating, and like all these bizarre psychedelic colors going on, and just
it
flashes.
Makes you feel like you're slipping into madness.
It does. It does an excellent job of that. And like I said at the beginning, like you feel what I almost called him Jeffries again. Scotty's feeling.
Told you, just stutter.
Jeff, just Jimmy. You feel what he's feeling.
Yeah.
And especially in this point where he's slipping into madness, and he does. He wakes up from his fever dream, and he goes,
my hair.
He goes bonkers.
Yeah, he does. And he ends up on the psych ward.
Yeah, it kind of flash forwards to like him in the mental hospital, and they evaluate him and say it's going to take a long time for him to get kind of come out of this.
Yeah, he won't talk to a year. Talk to Midge.
Yeah, Midge. She's trying.
She's trying to
one
bring
last
him back.
Time. Can do it because he's in love with Madeline,
with the dead girl.
Still in love with her, and there's nothing she can do about that. There's nothing she can do to help him, and exits Midge.
Yeah, you were like, "That's the last time you see her." I'm like, "Well, I'll see ya," because she's not funny.
That's not funny, Midge.
That's not funny at all.
if you watch this movie, you'll know you'll get the joke.
Yeah.
So, fast forward. A year. And now he's back out in the world, and he's making his rounds.
Yeah,
you know,
he's basically visiting the spots that he visited with Madeline.
Mm-hmm. And everywhere he goes, he kind of sees her. But
everywhere you look,
we are in San Francisco.
Madeline, people hold on to. What?
And he sees her everywhere he goes, but you know, upon closer look, it's not her; it's someone else. And yes. And he's stuck. He's obsessed.
Yeah.
And he sees this one girl in particular upon one of his usual
visits.
Funny,
she's probably the one that looked the least like her in terms of like the he'd been looking at blondes and people wearing the same outfits and stuff. And he sees this woman in brown hair and.
Yeah, it was her eyebrows. You're like, those eyebrows look familiar, man.
Yeah.
Where'd you get those eyebrows?
Excuse me. Need some information.
That's pretty much what he says because he follows her to her apartment.
He gets in the door.
He's like, I just want to talk to you. Like, who are you?
Yeah. That's basically what she said.
Get out of my house.
Yeah. I just want to talk. Just want to come inside. And she's like, well, you don't look like Jack the Ripper. I'm like, I've seen this movie.
I've seen this episode of Criminal Minds.
I'm like, I've seen this one.
And,
this is where he pulls out the rope. Get out of there. Throw you out the window.
He explains a little bit that, you know, she just reminds him of a woman he was in love with that died. And he's wanted to talk to her. And they have a kind of like an on-edge conversation. Like, I don't know if I should talk to you. I don't know if I should let you in. And they talk, and ultimately she agrees to let him take her out to dinner.
Yeah, he's smooth. Try that on Tinder. Like, be like, hey, send me your address. And then she sends the address, and you show up, and you're like, I just want to talk.
That's it. Well, I'm going to take you out to dinner.
You remind me of a dead girl I know.
I'll start with that.
Yeah.
Hey, you remind me of a dead girl I used to know. I'd be like, let me take you to dinner.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Well, do it for me.
Yeah, that's what he does. It's weird. But then, like I said, this movie is like a master of hindsight. Because we were joking there, and it sounds weird. But in hindsight, in watching this movie, it makes sense, right? It's like, because you come to realize that this woman, it does play back that scene where she's kind of like, not daydreaming, but reminiscing of this moment, where you know, she's running up the stairs, and Jimmy Stewart's character, Scotty's chasing after her, and she gets up to the top. And you see the husband with his wife holding her, and she's knocked out. And he throws her off the building. So you know that this woman that Jimmy Stewart's character, Scotty, had fallen in love with was actually an actress. And she does explain in a note to him that she was an actress paid by the husband to basically trick Scotty into being a witness to this set-up suicide.
Mm-hmm.
To kill off the wife and gain him insurance money and get him out of this shipping business and help him to move to
Europe.
Yeah, to Europe. So she's writing this letter to him to let him know, and she's going to pack up all her belongings and leave town, but then she rips up the note and decides that, you know, she loves him. She loves
him.
That's
what she didn't intend.
Yeah, she didn't intend to fall in love with this man. So she loves him, so she's going to stick around for this man, but... You know, they go to the dinner and they're having a good time, but he just can't get over the fact that she looks almost too much like Madeline.
Wink,
Judy.
Wink. She is Madeline,
but he can't. And the first time I watched this, I didn't even realize it was Kim Novak, because Kim Novak does a phenomenal job. A, they change her appearance right down to her hair. She's got like curls in her face. Mm-hmm. It's a different hairdo. Her hair's brown now.
She's a little tan.
Darker complexion. And she talks different. She has a different type of accent. She talks quicker. Where Madeline would maybe talk very slow paced and
more breathy.
Yes, say things like this, and she's like, I'm Judy. I don't know what you want. I'm from Kansas. Like, she just talks really fast. Yeah.
I'm from Kansas. What more do you want?
Yeah. Here's my license. Here's my social security number.
You
take
happy?
It. I don't know. I'm from Kansas. I talk like I'm from Brooklyn. Get out of here.
Forget about it.
Yeah. And I'm from Kansas. Yin's down here and that. No.
But yeah.
You're telling me apart, Lisa.
She's in love with him.
Yes.
But she can't tell him. She can't tell him
for
that.
For some reason.
That. Well, because, we'll get to it, but the ending kind of explains why he doesn't, because he goes a little bonkers, and she's part of a crime,
yeah,
you know? So she decides to keep up the ruse to be with him.
But he's still kind of crazy.
He's obsessed.
Kind of crazy and kind of, like, semi-abusive.
Yeah, oh, no, very abusive, because in his obsession, he tries to transform her.
Yes.
Tries to change her. Into the woman that he wants her to
be. Be like taking your, like, fiance and being like, I'm going to make you Scarlett Johansson. Come here. Like,
dye your
it's
hair.
Not right at all.
Change your clothes. That's not what Scarlett would wear. She'd wear this.
Yeah, he's like.
This Black Widow outfit.
Yeah.
Do it!
He's like buying her clothes, taking her to the flower shops that she would visit. And then there's like a scene where she's basically saying, like, I don't want to do this anymore. Why can't you just love me? And she's like professing her love and saying, you know, just love me for who I am. And he's like looking at her hair. And he's like, your hair change it.
You need to go.
And then she comes back with the blonde hair and he's like, it's all wrong. You need to have it pinned back with pins in it. I told them. Go do it. Do it for me. And so she does it. And there's that. That's probably an iconic scene too. She goes into the bathroom. She does up her hair. And when he hears the door open, and he turns around, and there's Kim Novak, blonde hair, looking just like Madeline. That was the first time I realized when I watched this movie. I was like, oh, it is her. Like, it is legitimately her. Which might sound stupid, but they do a really good job at, like, making you feel different about this movie and this person. But she's in, like, a green glow. And it's almost like a ghost coming back to life. She steps, like, from this green glow, and there's, like, almost like a mist quality to the room.
No, it looks like a ghost.
Yeah,
for real.
And she walks out of the mist into the light, and it's like she's coming back. And then the next scene, Jimmy's all happy. They have a passionate kiss again.
Groping.
Yeah, a little groping. And, yeah, then Jimmy's all happy. He'll take her out to wherever she wants. But then she puts on a necklace, and that necklace is that of Carletta. And
Madeline.
Yeah, and Madeline. And he remembers that necklace, and that's her one fatal error, her one mistake. So he decides he's going to take her up to the Spanish missionary. And you want to take it from there.
Yeah, he kind of figures her out, but he's playing it. He's playing it clever, and he's like, "Oh, we're gonna eat somewhere out of town here."
Yeah.
And they drive there, and he's like, "She's like, where are you taking me? Where are we going?" He's like, "Oh, I just wanna handle some things out of town first before we go out to dinner." Yeah. And they go to the tower.
I just want to go get some brandy. She's a fine girl. What a good wife she would be.
And they get to the old
Saint John.
Well,
my life, my love, and my lady is a sea. Okay, continue.
Grabs her. And he's like, listen, I figured it all out. He's dragging her up the tower. He's like, there's just one more memory I got to relive. And as he's dragging her up, he reveals, like, yeah, your one fatal error was the necklace.
Yeah.
And as they get up to the, get closer and closer to the bell tower.
And she keeps telling him, like, he's not going to be able to get up there. And he's like, I'll do it. This is my second chance.
Yep. And that's what he's looking for, is a redemption. From the very beginning of the movie when he had vertigo and it caused a death, to the second time he had vertigo heavily and it caused a death. Like, this is his second chance.
Yeah.
His third chance, really. And he made it.
Yeah.
He gets over his fear from another traumatic experience, realizing the woman he loved who had died is actually alive still.
Yeah.
But a criminal. So he brings her to the top of the bell tower, and he confronts her, yelling and forcefully, just kind of this is the one time that, like, his violence, I guess, is warranted, and he kind of pulls out.
It's not even violence. It's more like
it's just yelling.
He's yelling. He's like
aggressive.
He's very angry. Yeah,
he's just
because
aggressive and angry.
He's realizing that, like, this woman that he loved for and cared for, and he was put through this, like, immense emotional stress about, realize that she was never dead. And the fact that he kind of probably feels that this love that maybe she was portraying for him was all an act.
Yeah, it was all fake because yeah, she's
an
actress.
She was being paid. Yeah, she's been paid with money and jewelry. And
yeah. He's calling her out on everything, and, you know, you and what am I trying to say? He as you just said, he feels like maybe it was all fake.
Yeah.
And that she was just an actress.
Liar!
And she said, if it was all fake, now that we came across each other again, I could have left.
Yeah.
But I wanted to stay with you because I love you, because I fell in love with you.
Yeah.
And he's
that's
so,
when he kind of realized.
Yeah, he's so angry, but he pulls her in, and they have one passionate kiss, and then go for it.
Then as they're kissing, then...
who's there?
Yeah, someone's coming up the stairs, and Madeline, a.k.a. Judy, looks over to the stairs and sees a dark hooded figure coming up, almost like death coming a calling.
Gets frightened.
Yeah, you hear, "Who's there? I heard voices." And Madeline gets so scared that she takes a couple steps back and unknowingly falls off the tower and dies.
And Jimmy, Scotty, once again, looks down and sees death.
Yeah, and that's how the movie ends.
You're like, fuck.
Yeah, that's like that's the final twist. It's like, okay. Happy ending. Oh.
Yeah, whoops.
He gets the girl. Yay! Oh.
Watch out for that step. It's a doozy.
Yeah. You ever seen Batman 1989? This is the ending. When
she
Vicky Vale dies.
She falls down like the Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if that was like an alternate ending where there's like laughing teeth?
Yeah. Fantastic film, fantastic roller coaster
so
of emotion and twists and turns in writing and
quotable,
very quotable as we've
unnecessarily
done.
Quotable.
That's it's why like, I said it's like an inside joke.
Yeah.
Or it has become one.
You could watch this movie and not ever quote it, and we're
yeah,
like we're quoting the hell out of this film.
Edge. Yeah, throw this miserable thing out the window.
Yeah.
And it's a masterpiece in filmmaking.
And it wasn't appreciated when it came out.
No.
As
a lot of his works.
One, though, is so good. So, so good. And it really does mess with you. And they haven't made a movie like this. And to pull off a double twist, I think, is hard
in
cinema.
It's a triple twist.
It's hard to pull off a twist in general. Yeah, you could say that this movie has the first twist where Madeline dies, like, midway through the film. And you're like, huh? And then you could say the second twist is figuring out that Madeline isn't really dead, and then the third twist would probably be that Madeline dies at the end again.
Yeah.
So you could say, yeah, he's probably...
I don't know if that's a twist or maybe just a shock ending.
A shock. I would say two are shocks and one's a twist.
Yeah.
But even to pull that off in a 2-hour and 9-minute-long film, you know, most films build to a twist in the final 15 minutes. This does it differently, and that's really kind of like A breath of fresh air.
And it's bold film, bold filmmaking, and that's what Hitchcock was all about. If you ever go back and watch his films, they're each impressive. This was, as they say, his most personal film. There's a lot of heart and soul that went into this movie, and it just has his stamp riddled in Vertigo. Everywhere you look, there's a heart, and it's Hitchcock's.
Everywhere you look.
So the real question is, how do you remake a masterpiece?
I know. Well, first, before we go into that, I do want to say, if you've never seen this movie, be sure to check it out. You can really it's not going to be on like your streaming services probably, but you know, you go to a Walmart, you go to a Best Buy, you go to an FYE, you go to wherever you buy your movies, you can find Hitchcock collections, you can find this movie on its own, but it's really worth the watch. It's definitely just so enjoyable. I would definitely recommend it. And even if you are a person that's like, I don't like older movies, give it a shot. Give it a shot for the kids.
Give it a whirl.
Yeah, yeah. But like Gus just said, how does one go about remaking it? And we're going to try. You ready to submit this movie to the factory? In this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we submit it to the factory. This is where we take the movie and we pretend, what it'd be like if it came out today? Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, just different directors and cast and crew. All right, so with that being said, for today's film, a shorter list of people, but there's really not a lot of... there's notable characters, but there's not... There's really three focuses, or three mains, I would say. So we're going to do our director of Vertigo. We're going to do a composer. We're going to do Scotty, Jimmy Stewart's character, Madeline, Kim Novak's character, and Midge. Midge. So yes, for our director, Vertigo, who are you going with?
So I'm going with a director I like to see whenever he puts out, and that is Spike Jonze. Started out doing music videos, things like that, but he really got his, I don't want to say big start in films, but being recognized as a name to be reckoned with, and being John Malkovich. A lot of people dig that.
I've never seen that movie, but I've heard it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's
I like John Malkovich.
It's bizarre. It's great. Adaptation. Do you ever see Adaptation? Nick Cage?
I don't think I've seen any Spike Jonze movies.
Yes, you have. Adaptation is great. You need to check that out. He did, Where the Wild Things Are.
Didn't see it.
You didn't see Where the Wild Things Are?
I told you. I don't think I've seen any of his movies. Oh, Her. Midge.
Her?
No, I haven't seen her.
Go fuck yourself.
I've seen him.
Hey.
No, I haven't seen her.
Oh, no, you got to see her. So, he's
Scarlett Johansson.
He's a wonderful, yeah, he's a wonderful director and storyteller, but visually, he can really suck you in. And that's something I appreciate about Vertigo, is its use of color and its use of costume and set design to really help aid in telling the story and making you feel what Jeffrey's cock me
Jeffrey
sideways.
Dahmer.
Scotty's feeling.
Scotty Pippen and that.
I told you, Rear Wind is my favorite Hitchcock movie, so when I see Jimmy Stewart
and
Hitchcock.
That's what you wanted to watch. You were like secretly trying, dude.
I was like,
you want to watch Vertigo? And you're like, Vertigo or Rear Window?
Rear Window?
And you're like, what are we watching this week, Vertigo or Rear Window? I'm like, Vertigo. I
was just trying to get you to watch something you've never seen. Yeah.
I told you why I didn't want to watch it. I told you. Damn it.
The hair won't do.
Yeah, no.
Change your clothes.
Blonde hair.
Spike Jonze.
Okay. I went with a director who I chose him for certain reasons, but then other reasons I don't know if he'd be the best pick, and I'm sure it'll pique or tickle your fancy. I went with a director who started off super, super strong and then kind of fell off. And he's kind of having a more of a resurgence now. Now, this is an director that I think could pull off the twist of this film well. I don't know if he could pull off the ups and the downs and the journey this movie takes you on. That's M. Night Shyamalan. It's Shyamalan, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is the director of The Sixth Sense, Glass to be his most recent film. Split, and,
Unbreakable,
Village, Signs, Lady in the Water, The Last Airbender,
Sold,
yeah, The Happening, what? No, they're evacuating the city.
Just when he thought there could be no more evil that could be invented,
but yes, so like we said, he's had his ups and downs, but you watch like The Sixth Sense. I was thinking of this. Watch The Sixth Sense and look at the emotional journey that movie takes you on, and just the utter surprise you have at the end of that film with that twist. Even right down to, you see, that's a supernatural film. You see what's happening to Cole, the boy, and you see how Bruce Willis's character is handling it, and it's so up and down and winding, and you don't really know what's going on. You know, is this kid imagining it? Is it all in his head, or does he really see dead people? You see Bruce Willis think, it's all in his head. Then you see him, it's such a good movie. I think M. Night Shyamalan would be able to pull that twist off, but also, on his good day,
yeah,
pull off like a masterclass of a film, like a winding, emotional journey. And maybe, even fit himself in there as the husband.
Yeah, how about you? He probably would.
Or the lawyer. He'd probably be like the lawyer.
I'll tell you what.
Judge.
He'd be the cop who fell to his death. I when I was thinking of directors, I wanted to go M. Night Shyamalan, and I didn't because I don't know why I didn't. I thought it was almost too obvious of a pick, but actually it is the right pick, I think.
Yeah.
I do. I truly do. This is an unpopular opinion, but for me in my life and what I like, M. Night Shyamalan is one of my favorite directors of all time. Very inspirational to me, his works and his art and his storytelling and his just the way he makes his movies. Even his bad ones, I dig them. But his great ones are some of my favorites and most important to me. So for a special film like Vertigo, I want M. Night.
M. Night Shyamalan. All right. Well, then next up we have our composer. Who you got?
This, I use his name often on the podcast just because he's one of my favorites too, and I'm glad we went with M. Night Shyamalan because he accompanies him very well. That's James Newton Howard.
That's who I had. I was going with
because when I think of the score for Vertigo, a lot of strings. Blum, 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 blum.
I almost recommended the composer from like the Insidious movies because of his string work and like his like bang, like
that being unnerving, yes. But I went James Newton Howard mainly for his work in The Village, one of my favorite scores of all time. A lot of excellent violin work, but he has such a good way of making you feel uneasy, but making you feel calm and making you feel in love through the aid of score. James Newton Howard, one of my favorites, and like I said, Village being one of my favorite scores of all time, I think he'd be perfect to accompany this emotional roller coaster of a film.
Yeah, that's who I had as well. So we'll go with James Newton Howard as our composer. What about Midgey?
Midgey baby. Who you got for Midgey baby?
So Midge, I wanted someone. So Midge is an interesting character in the show because she's like this person that has this really good relationship with the main character. You can kind of tell because I would say, how old was Jimmy Stewart supposed to be in this movie? Do you think
he's?
Scotty?
Like, I mean, his 40s? He's 50.
50s?
He was 50 when they made the movie. I'm guessing he's supposed to be around that age.
So I always assumed that Midge was somewhere around the same age as him. If not, close to. So when I was thinking of this, I wanted someone who was going to have chemistry with my Scotty. Yeah. So when I was really looking towards it and trying to figure out, a perfect Midge, if you will, I went, and mine, I guess, are going to be semi younger. Not like terribly younger, but it would be Kirsten Dunst to play my Midge. Kirsten Dunst, mostly known for Mary Jane and Spider-Man. She's in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. She's like the one crazy girl that's like in love
she's
with
in the Small Soldiers.
Yeah,
damn it,
she's in Small Soldiers. She's
Jumanji.
She's 36. Is she now? So she's a little younger than probably Midge is. But we can always. It's different.
The actress might have been that old around that time. I don't really know. That doesn't really matter either.
Yeah.
If you ask me, because Kirsten Dunst or Kirsten. Kirsten part. Fuck me sideways.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, she's my favorite. I don't know her name.
I am in love with her. Don't tell Becky. she'll kick my arse.
Yes, she will.
That's good. That's a good pull. Good pull, but. Mine might be better. Yours is a little drab and disgusting. Mine is Emily Mortimer. She plays Nicole in The Pink Panther, but she's also in The Kid with old Bruce Willis back in the day.
Did she talk with a French accent?
Maybe. She's in Howl's Moving Castle as young Sophie. Hey, how about that? Has a voice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that
voice.
Was her.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Been in love with that voice for years.
She's in Hugo. She most recently was in Mary Poppins Returns as an older
Mary Poppins.
Yes, Jane Banks. So, delightful actress, but she can be witty, she can be spunky, and that's kind of what Midge brings to the table. And she can be a bud who make you drink.
And she's like a brother to you. Hot sexy brother dress.
Hot sexy brother.
Was that Pink Panther 1 or 2 where he says
that's
that?
That's 2.
Like, Nicole, you are like a brother to me. A hot, sexy brother in a dress.
That's the second one.
This movie's so good. All right. You want to flip for it?
Ah, yes.
All right. So, yes. Heads, Kirsten Dunst. Tails, Emily Mortimer. Yo. Heads, I win the day. Kirsten Dunst.
We must never forget to...
must never forget to not remember it.
Yes, sir.
All right. Next up, Madeline. Madeline!
Oh, Madeline.
Madeline.
Well, how do
Made you... Made Madeline.
How do you replace old Kim Novak? Novak.
So good.
So, who's one of today's beauties, who's an excellent actress?
Kirsten Dunst.
Who's multifaceted and a complex actress in of herself, and that would be old Margot Robbie.
Oh,
Margot Robbie. But we wouldn't play Australian, though. Yeah. Maybe give her new Jersey accent, her Kansas accent. Excellent actress, Oscar-nominated. She was in Tanya. Most recently was in... hold on now. Mary, Queen of Scots. Excellent actress. Probably most famously known for playing Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad and being in The Wolf of Wall Street, where she kind of had her, not debut, but her that was like her grand opening to the masses.
Yes.
Excellent actress. I could see one going crazy about becoming obsessed with her.
Yeah. I would say she's one of the biggest actresses in Hollywood right now. She is phenomenal. She's beautiful as well. I'm going to go with she was one of the biggest names in Hollywood for a while there. I think she's knowingly kind of not fallen off, but kind of like backed off of the scene for a little while.
Who's that?
That's Jennifer Lawrence.
Ooh.
J-Law. I feel like J-Law does a very good job. She has like the seduction eyes down. And she's just a phenomenal actress. Jennifer Lawrence, obviously Katniss Everdeen in The Hunger Games. She's Mystique in the X-Men, the newer X-Men movies. She is in Silver Linings Playbook, which she's phenomenal in. Which she won the Oscar for that, correct?
Which one?
Silver Linings?
Yes, she did.
Yes. And so J-Law is just a phenomenal actress, and she continues to be great. And I think that she just has that, like, seduction area down. Like, she's just played those roles where, like, she's just in that movie.
Like Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow, where that's, like, her thing. Like, she's seductress, that seducting assassin. But, yes, definitely J-Law, I think, would be a good old Kim Novak.
We got some good Madelines here.
Yeah.
So might as well flip for them.
All right. So heads, we'll go J-Law. Tails, Margot Robbie. Tails, Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie.
Margot. All right. Last up, our Scotty. Our Scotty. Yeah.
I'm curious who you have.
You think I'm going with Tobey Maguire, but I'm not.
I want. Now I'm gonna go. One of my favorite actors working today. I didn't realize this, but yes, he has worked with old M. Night a couple times, and that would be Joaquin Phoenix.
Okay.
Excellent actor. He's one of those chameleon actors. He can be anyone, do anything, including being the everyman. It was weird. The way I was trying to pick out my actor was who could I see hanging from a gutter and reacting in a way reminiscent to like Jimmy Stewart, who portrayed terror so realistically. You know, I was thinking of that, and I thought of Joaquin Phoenix. And who could I go on a journey with and feel what they're feeling?
Who could have a really nice mustache?
Who could have a great mustache? I was like, what actors are the best?
Yeah, what actors are everyman? Michael Keaton, get in here.
Get in here.
You're a little too old. If this movie came out in like the 90s, Michael Keaton.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. And Michelle Pfeiffer.
If it was early 2000s, Tobey Maguire, but apparently that's not who I'm getting. Who
no,
am I getting?
No.
It's not pizza time.
You're getting someone that you definitely know their face.
I know.
You know that face.
Face.
I'm going with James Franco. Now, he is 40. Like I said, we might tone down the ages here a little bit. He's 40 years old as opposed to Jimmy Stewart, who was 10 years older during the making of this film. However, I'm thinking of like along the lines of what is that? You have it here? Is this the book? Yeah, this is the book. James Franco was just in that Hulu series, 11-22-63, where he goes back in time with the Kennedy assassination and everything. And he kind of has that, like, old school. Now it's 63, and this movie was 58. But it's kind of, like, the same, like, clothing and the setup and the getup.
Hey, he's always great and powerful.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good actor. And I was thinking of, like, things, like you said, you were thinking of someone that could portray this fear and this, like, these moments of anxiety. I mean, think of, like, 127 Hours. And James Franco, you know, sometimes he has this, it's funny because he's such an interesting actor in the sense that there are movies where you're like, he's not good. And then there's movies where you're like, he's really good.
And there's movies that he's so bad and you're like, he's great.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. But I think James Franco, right down to the point, like, we mentioned it. And Joaquin Phoenix is kind of the same way, but like, we were looking at Jimmy Stewart. I'm like, his eyes are close together. And you're like, I think it's just like he's got like a slim, like slim features. I'm like, James Franco's kind of got that going on too. He's got like
James
a slim...
Franco, his eyes always look like they're shut.
Yeah. So in that.
How I describe James Franco's performances is his line from Spider-Man 3 when he's eating the pie. He's like, how's the pie? So good.
What if James Franco gets like diagnosed with this acrophobia and they're like, will it ever go away? And they're like, no. And he's like, at the beginning when he's explaining it to Midge, he's explaining it, like how he's gonna get rid of it. And so she's like, how are you gonna deal with it? And instead of being like, I'm gonna step up each stair every day and, you know, get a little higher, look up, look down, he just whips out a joint and starts smoking weed because it's James Franco.
What if he goes to climb up and then he hears a voice like, ah, who's there? Oh, that's not him. That's not Will Ferrell either. Who's that? Willem Dafoe. What year is it?
Yes, but James Franco. And then I'd get my Midge and my Kirsten Dunst and then James Franco as my Scotty. Too haughty.
What? Whoa. Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, then we'll get Jimmy Stewart in here. We'll bring him back from the dead, but we'll put him in James Franco's body.
Yeah, he'll possess Scotty.
Yeah. All right, well, that is our movie then. If this movie was to come out today, Gus and I would put M. Night Shyamalan at the helm. We'd get James Newton Howard to compose it. To play our Midge, we'd get Kirsten Dunst, Margot Robbie behind our Madeline, our leading girl, and then our head of the movie, James Franco, as our Scotty.
Before we go out, I did have a question for you, a reminder, rather.
Yeah.
You said when he was going up the stairs, you're like, I have a joke. I want to remember it. What was it? Do you remember the joke?
I don't remember it.
You cuck.
I knew I wouldn't either.
You're like, I'll remember that.
That was when we were like midway through all the brandy. We were drinking, and I was like,
I got a joke. I'll remember it, though.
Nope.
All right.
And I had a question, too, and I don't remember it either. Because I was like,
yeah,
I got a question for you.
It's my week for questions,
right?
I'll wait.
But I don't remember that question either. But, yes, so that is the factory. Now we'll move on to our little questiony time we got. So, in this movie, he suffers from his vertigo, his acrophobia, right? And I guess the question I want to ask you here is, you know, this vertigo leads to Madeline being killed, as he thinks, and he blames that. But then he, you know, through Madeline or Judy holding back, she says, you know, I'm not going to tell him. Now, we mentioned to each other halfway through this whole charade that she's playing with him. I was like, wouldn't it be easier if Madeline or Judy just flat out told him? And you were like, yeah, I think it would be easier. I think he'd be happier. But let's go into depth on that. What do you think would have happened if Madeline would have just flat out told him, been like, I am her. I am the Madeline you fell in love with, but I'm an actress, and I helped in a murder, and you were a cop. Like, what do you think would have happened?
See, I think he went through such a traumatic experience, and he had a whole year of his life kind of taken away from that, and he's like in recovery mode, but he's haunted.
Yeah.
And so if she were to reveal that I am her, I was an actress, but I do love you, after some explaining, after some anger, after some fights, after some conversation,
after some hair dyeing and clothes buying,
after some brandy and some cushion, I think they they could have worked it out.
Been a happy family.
I think they could have been.
Instead of her falling to her death.
Yeah, I think that's what's so tormenting about the film in a wonderful way is it did play out the way it did. And it makes it more interesting, and it'll stick to you. Stick to your ribs a little bit more.
You're waiting for Vertigo 2 to come out.
Yeah, and when she comes back again.
Yeah.
And
Vertigo 2, The Happening.
Wait, who? M. Night is directing it. So, yeah, that's what I really think would have happened. Maybe they would have pursued Gavin, the husband, who, you know, committed the crime with our Madeline, but I also, part of me feels like he wouldn't pursue that, because if he did, he'd lose her again.
Yeah.
She'd get taken to jail. So I think after some time, he'd be able to accept her and get to know the new Madeline.
She almost has like this lack of, like, that's almost glossed over. It's like she loves him, but like, you gotta imagine she's like semi not there. Like, she participated in a murder. Like, she willingly got paid and tricked a man into being a suspect in a murder.
And it's almost like twice now she was being someone she wasn't truly, because she wasn't really Madeline, she was acting. And then she wasn't really Judy, she was acting.
Yeah.
Like, who is she?
Who am I? I'm Jean Valjean.
24601!
What if we remade Vertigo, but it was like
a musical?
The heights! I cannot stand the heights!
I look up, I look down, I look up, I look down.
I look up, I look down.
That's not funny, Midge.
Buy our CD, out tomorrow.
Shit.
All right, well, that is
drink
the
it
show.
Drink it down like it's medicine.
We could do this.
Hey, let's do it. We'll be back.
Can we ask Alfred?
Hey, he's not doing anything.
Alrighty, well, that is the show, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it. I know a lot of you are looking forward to this episode. Be sure, if you liked what you heard, to subscribe to us on Audioboom. That is our primary podcasting site. That's who puts it out to all our other podcasting sites. If you liked what you heard, though, you can check us out on any of those other ones. Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. You can also find us on Twitter. You know, we are at the Bros Movie Pod. We post every day new movies we're watching, new shows. We also post clips. We post memes that Gus makes. Check us out on there. We're also retweeting really great podcasts, so be sure to check them out in that. You can also find us on Facebook.
You Facebook search the Brothers Movie Factory.
The Brosers.
The Broser. Browser.
I'm Gother.
Gozer. No, you search the Brothers Movie Factory. You'll find us there on the old Facebook, and you can see what we're watching each and every week, as well as some fun memes I like to make and a post on there, my friends.
Goodbye, Augustus. Alrighty, well, that is the show, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it, and until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers. Yeah. Brandy.